Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, folks, and welcome back to Radio for Your Mind. We took Friday off as we were attending the Real Savvy Success Women's Empowerment Conference. And I tell you what, it was streaming live. As a matter of fact, if you want to go back and see some of the highlights, you can go to realsavvysuccess.com/live and truly see the power of some creative females in all different genres and different niches and different industries as they came together as one. And that was truly amazing to me. I met women this weekend that make more money in a month than most men make in a year. Some make more money in a month than some men make in their lifetime. And as I studied it, as I listened to these ladies speak, as I saw how they had risen to the top of their own little professions, one thing came to mind. They were playing to win. I knew I had this challenge, and I was totally blown away at the magnitude in which I saw this weekend. You know, in Howard Schultz's book, what I found unique is he wrote it with Joanne Gordon, and we're going to see if we can get Joanne either on one of our radio shows or at the next RSS event, because I believe this is a lady who runs around with some very influential people. She is an excellent journalist, and she wrote this book, Onward, How Starbucks Fought for Its Life Without Losing Its Soul. She was able to captivate Howard's thoughts, his passion, what he was trying to accomplish. Playing to win, Starbucks' top coffee experts watched with bated breath as I tasted their newest blend for the first time. How many of you work for a corporation, work for a direct selling company, you're in the field, you're trying something new? Isn't it a risk? I mean, when you think about it out loud, it's a huge risk. And here are these guys who are taking that risk. He says, I put my nose to the cup and inhaled deeply, bringing the liquid to my lips. Next, in traditional coffee tasting form, I made a loud slurping noise as the coffee sprayed back against my palate. My eyes opened wide. The taste was significantly different from anything Starbucks had ever marketed. When I read that paragraph, I didn't think just of coffee. I thought of every company that has to look back and say, have we lost our core values? Have we lost our core competency? It doesn't matter what niche it is. If you've lost it, if you try something new, if you're going out on a limb, if you get outside that competency factor, there's an issue. It amazes me as I read this book how it can affect the lives of network marketers. He goes on, he says, while the flavor was a bit light for my personal preference, I thought it was fantastic because of what the coffee represented. Starbucks' renewed effort to play to win as opposed to playing not to lose. That right there stood out to me. Are you playing to win or are you playing not to lose? See, there's a difference. There's a whole training that can be done just on that phrase, playing to win versus playing to lose. All of a sudden, the mindset had shifted. The whole focus for the organization had shifted. And they were once again playing to win. Howard goes on, he says, for the past few years, Starbucks had been acting out of fear, mainly fear of failure. So much of what the company had done was defensive, done to protect itself. Our primary goal had been to avoid missing our earning projections rather than actively engage our customers. What are you doing? Are you playing to win or playing to lose? Are you actively out there talking with your customers, talking with your team members? Are you out there soliciting third-party advice, third-party input? Are you looking at your product mix and saying, how can we stay true to our core and yet revolutionize and bring out new products? A company that comes to mind. And I study companies constantly. One such company, and this will be the first time we've said anything about this company, but it just stands to reason that it works. A company called Wyora has brought out a sister brand, a sister company. and I can't give you the name yet, but what they've done is they've realized, as I've been saying for the last few months, that the coffee niche is very young, even though it's been around for centuries. And they have just now created a brand new company, a brand new sister brand that's focusing on coffee. This is a company who we've reviewed their products and used them. They're phenomenal. One of my good friends, Corey Johnson, has just, I mean, made boatloads of money helping families. And yet their CEO and founder says, you know what, I want to do something new. He reached outside to a couple of former people and said, since you're not actively engaged in building Wyora, I'd like to call you in for your expertise. I'd like to call you in and see if you can help me launch this company. I'm proud to say over the weekend, on a Saturday as they launched, 1,600 people joined that company. But he went out on a limb. He had a stable brand. Wyora is stable. It makes millions a year. His distributors are happy. They're sharing it. But he knew he needed something new. See, that's the kind of leadership in a corporate office and in the field that you must have. One of the people that are leading this new company is Donna Valdez, a great, great sister friend of mine. And I'm proud of her because over the weekend she's also of the Real Savvy Success organization, and here she is launching a company. Talk about multitasking. But that's what this is about. Looking into playing to win. Howard writes, growing up on what was literally the wrong side of the tracks in Brooklyn, my afternoons and weekend were usually dedicated to playing sports. A time when from dawn until dark, if kids weren't in school, they were at the schoolyard playing every kind of ball. Javolution, another company that's rocking it in network marketing, their CEO was also just a block or two away from where Howard grew up in the Brooklyn area. And now they're kicking it out. It amazes me as I read through this, the similarities. Howard says, few kids would grow up and make it out of our area, but every time I smacked the basketball high and clear across the asphalt yard and across home plate, or powered my way to a touchdown passing boys who were bigger and stronger and faster, it made me realize everything seemed possible. I always took big, bold swings. I wanted nothing less than a home run. Folks, that's what you have to go for. It doesn't mean you're going to make it. Babe Ruth, who has the most home runs in history, also had the most strikeouts. A strikeout was just his no. It was one step closer to the home run, to the yes. See, that's the key. Some coffees these days, coffee companies, they're not the traditional coffee company. I know my friend Andrew Reinhardt over at Pure 3X is bringing out a new energy drink with what they call the coffee cherry. And to fill you in a little bit, Howard writes about this. He says, coffee beans come from a coffee cherry, a red-skinned fruit that when ripe is not much larger than a cranberry. Inside every cherry are two green coffee beans, each made up of hundreds of compounds whose composition, or what we'd know as potential flavor, vary based on where and how the cherry is grown. Now, this is big. Harvest coffee atop a steep mountain in Latin America, for instance, and its friendly flavor is reminiscent of the nuts or cocoa. Coffee grown in other regions can be more assertive, earthy, and herbal in the mouth. Which, wherever the location, the best beans, the ones that are enchantingly complex with flavor and compelling characters, known as Arabic, I think I said that right, grow under some degree of stress, like high altitude, intense heat, or long dry periods. Now, when I read that, here's what I thought. To be the best leader that you can be, you're going to have some degree of stress. It may be that you're not at high altitudes. It may be not intense heat or long dry periods, but yet, think about this. It can be. As a leader, have you ever gone through long dry periods before you get a close? Has the intensity of a debate been so heated that you wondered if you even wanted to stay in the profession in which you're dominating? Or what's it like when you get to the pinnacle? You're at that high altitude. And you wonder, can I go even higher or am I going to fall off the pedestal? It's amazing how the correlation between the best of the best in coffee beans and the best of the best in leaders come together. It's no wonder Howard Schultz came back into Starbucks, looked at the past, and realized you have to stay true to your roots, but you got to move forward into the future. Listen to this. This is great. He says, once the cherries are picked by hand, one of two things happen. Their skin is either removed and the remaining fruit and beans are fermented, or thousands of cherries are laid out on concrete patios to dry naturally before their beans are extracted. Then prior to being packed in sacks, our coffee experts taste or cup a small batch of beans of coffee to ensure their flavor. Man, I started thinking about this and I thought of my friend John Maxwell. John does this. He does one of two things with leaders. He either removes their skins and he makes them something better, or he gets them out there and he lets them ferment, and he keeps driving home the principles and the facts until they start to mature into something that they never dreamed that they would be. I thought, man, this is so wow. And then Howard writes something here. He says, only 3% of the world's highest quality beans are good enough to make it into our burlap sacks. See, leaders, just like coffee beans, are in the minority. And I'm not talking about leaders like Howard Schultz. I'm talking about common, everyday leaders like you. You're leading your household. You're leading your profession. You're leading your team, one person at a time. Some of you are home-based entrepreneurs, not even earning a couple hundred bucks a month, but you know if you just stay at it, it'll work. The funny thing is that most people don't stay at it. I listened to ladies this weekend share their story, and for the most part, none of them made it real fast. It took time. It took energy. It took effort. It truly amazes me the magnitude of that 3%. That 3% factor is hundreds of thousands, millions of people in today's world who have made it. Not off the backs of others, but with the collaboration of others, with the passion of others. And that's what we all have to be able to do. We have to come together as one and say, you know what? We're on this team together. We're going to make it. Now, I'm not talking about one gigantic team. I'm talking about your team, whatever it is you're doing. If you're the CEO, if you're the top distributor, if you're brand new to an industry, if you're running a business, if you're running brick and mortar, you're running a small coffee shop, whatever the case is. It's not you versus them. It's we working with them. That's the key to this. Howard writes something here, and I thought this is great. He says, our professional roasters are constantly refining our roasting process. Over the years, they have customized our machines and developed proprietary software to help control and replicate their techniques. We take tremendous pride in knowing that no one in the coffee business has more control over the roasting process than Starbucks. Every great company out there dominates the niche because they are constantly refining. They're replicating their techniques. They're looking for new technology. They're creating proprietary answers that will allow them to take it to a bigger and better form. But something that that Starbucks found. They found that in 2007, their dark roast, their original blends, which had created legions of loyal fans, was causing an issue. It said, most days our stores rotated their brewed coffee, offering our customers that we offer our customers so they could experience different types. Unfortunately, as we have eventually learned through market research, many people did not realize our stores switch brews daily. So some days they came in and loved the coffee. Other days they came in and thought it was too strong. The perception of what was the signature blend, the bold blend, had caused confusion with the people. Is your company going through that? Are you in the field? Sometimes you have tasting parties and things get messed up because you try different flavors of the company. The catalyst form was in 2007, a Consumers Report taste test ranked Starbucks coffee behind McDonald's. Howard says, I was not only stunned, I was not the only one stunned. How could an organization that goes to such lengths to produce, to procedure and to produce high-quality coffee be bested by a fast food chain? The perception. See, perception is the reality. See, that's hard to swallow. The perception of MLM is that it's a pyramid. So for millions of people, that's their reality. The reality is that corporate America is a pyramid, but that is not the perception. See how this works? Howard understood we have to change. And in the fall of 2007, put out a mandate. We've heard what many people told us, and we have to figure out a way to fix it. Not all of the partners agreed, but we knew that we had to do something. Some partners thought we were kowtowing to an inferior competitor and would be diluting our brand, but that was not what they were trying to do. And here's what happened. Led by one of the most profound experts in coffee, Andrew Linneman. Andrew and his team dug deep, taking all of their passion and knowledge and using Starbucks roasting technologies, and tried to create a unique blend that would be bold and authentic, yet more approachable. A smoother taste for that a population of brewed coffee drinkers would embrace, and that was worthy of our heritage. When I thought of that, I thought of two of my best friends in network marketing. These are guys I've never met personally. And you say, well, how in the heck can you call them best friends? Because they've been mentors to me. I've watched the love they put in for their brand and their people. And it's Richard Brook at 2110 and BK Brieco at Vima. And the reason that they stood out to me when I read this one little part is because they went to such great extremes to create their new brands. In BK's instance, not only did he create the brand, he's gone on to create several products like Starbucks that did not deviate from the core. The core of their product is called Vima, but he has Verve, he has Thirst, he has Next, and now he's bringing out a new, he brought out new PM, which is all with the same core formulation. And this summer we'll be bringing out the next soda pop for children. They're going to drink soda pop. It needs to be 100% healthy, and he knew that, and he's doing that. With Richard Brook, he brought out Life Shots with 2110. He wanted something that was true, that was all organic, that would take them to the next level, that would be more potent and help more people in all demographics than any other product in history. And he knew he would be bringing out more products after that, but he did not want to deviate from the core. And he brought out the best of the best. Took him over a year of formulation just to get to the final stages to launch it. This is what it takes to take it to that next level. Andrew Linneman has a saying. He says, the more you know, the better your technology, the more you can tweak. See, it's not about changing the core. It's about tweaking to make it better, to bring it into a new generation. They didn't just take a week to do this. They took months to formulate and create internal taste testings, external taste testings, everything to make it happen, to put it together the way it needed to be. Hundreds of samples, combination of coffee beans, where'd they come from, Guatemala, Colombia, Sumatra, where, putting it together. Some was too tart, some was too sour, some was too weak, some too strong. But at the end of a month of experimenting with almost 30 different recipes and roast curves, most had been eliminated. Then catch this. Then in a consumer taste test on December 3rd, one sample stood out superior. Constant Brew 19 was round, smooth, and balanced, and exhibited a mild, sweet finish. Jackpot, almost. It was not yet perfect. So throughout the 2007 holiday season, right up to New Year's Eve, the team roasted Constant Brew 19 again and again and again, tweaking. And finally, in January of 2008, they hit the mark with a flavor profile that did not abandon Starbucks' roasting philosophy, but whether it was served black or with cream and sugar, delighted more people's palates. The winning blend was balanced with and rich in flavor. Now, here is something that I found unique. I thought this was awesome. We named it Pike's Place Roast after our first store. I thought the name should be symbolic as the coffee. And in theory, as well as in flavor, Pike's Place Roast was a nod to our past. Remember, the very first Starbucks was at Pike's Place up there in Seattle. So they have a touch of tradition while embracing the future. It was one of the most transformational blends we have ever created, in part because it spoke to an audience that had yet to become part of Starbucks community. See, this is the kick butt part of this thing. Here you are, you're looking at a Consumer Reports doggone article that says McDonald's coffee tastes better. Okay, if McDonald's coffee tastes better, I can't get much business done in McDonald's. Now, the kids have a blast. The grandbabies have an awesome time. But I need to have a place I can do business. All of a sudden, Howard and the team realized, okay, if we can beat McDonald's, we're going to open up a brand new demographic. You know, most women have children. But that surprises you, right? They're going to go and they're going to hang out. They don't like bold, rich flavors all the time. That's why you see women drinking wine and champagne and beer more than they do, and mixed drinks more than they do straight shots of tequila, although we got some good country songs that way. So all of a sudden, here's these Starbucks, and if you're like me, you know, we live down here on the island. We got the Commons, beautiful, beautiful outdoor marketplace. You go to Starbucks, and then the women, they'll get their Frappuccinos or their Pike Place brew, and they go across, and they sit down, and the kids play in the children's area. See, he understood, we've already got a loyal following. They're not going anywhere, but we've got to increase our following. We've got to increase those who love us. And that's what he did. And I thought, man, that's just what we all have to do. If you're running a company today, your team should be constantly looking for ways to open the doors into those new demographics. It's not, you know what, people, I crack up because all the time it's sales, sales, sales. Howard makes it very clear. It's not about just sales. It's about constantly introducing the brand to new people. When you do that, the sales will come. This is what I loved. But listen to this. He said, one of the challenges, however, was to elevate Pike's Place Roast so that it would not be perceived as just another product. it had to come out of the gate screaming not only that it was a new brew, but also that Starbucks was back and dead serious about recapturing our coffee authority. Is your company doing that? How bad do you want to capture? See, it's funny to me because I've seen a boatload of companies try to break into new niches, try to break into new vertical. Instead of looking at what they have done, changing what they're doing and say, we're going to go back to dominating our niche. See, if you can't dominate your niche by bringing out some new products, a new brand, how do you think you're going to break into a new niche? It won't work. That's the sad thing. All you'll be doing is throwing good money after bad. You have to analyze your core competency and where you're at. If change isn't made at the core, and you allow those fractures in the foundation to grow, you end up imploding on yourself. And that's what sucks. Howard writes, we position Pike Place Roast as nothing less than our reinvention of brewed coffee, and to further back up the claim, we did indeed reinvent our brewed experience. Once again, now see, understand, now we read this in the first nine chapters. From when Howard left the company to when he came back in 2007, the company had changed. They'd gotten away from grinding the beans. They'd brought in food. They'd screwed the experience up. It was no longer that third place you wanted to come to. It was that place you just wanted to run into and leave, kind of like an outhouse. Okay, you got to do your duty. Get my coffee. I'm out the door. I'm not staying. Don't like the aroma. And he was bringing back a place that you wanted to hang out. You wanted to stay. It became the front porch, so to speak. It was the uptown where you'd go sit around and listen to the stories. It was the barber shop. He says, once again, we would grind beans in our store, a ritual we'd abandoned in order to serve customers more quickly. Now, in lieu of being ground at the plant and delivered to stores in sealed bags, all beans were for brewed coffee would arrive whole, be scooped and ground by the baristas. The coffee would only be on the shelf for 30 minutes or less, and then we'd pitch it. These were significant changes that were sure to jolt our operations in ways that we could prepare for but would not fully predict. When you take a risk, you can prepare, but you cannot predict what will happen. This is why I always live by the verse in Proverbs by the ancient Hebrew king Solomon, that you can make your plans, and you should make plans, but God directs the path. Nothing in my life surprises me anymore. I take it, I deal with it, because I know that I've done everything I could to prepare, but I'm not about to try to predict what the future will bring. One thing that I will agree with Howard on this, more than one, but this is the one for today as we close out the show. Losing was not an option. See, Starbucks had gone from playing not to lose to playing to win. Howard realized we have to play to win. You cannot be playing not to lose. And once you realize which one of those you're doing right now, all of a sudden, you'll get it. You'll understand. Howard says this, strategically, Pike Place Roast had the potential to be a powerful catalyst for and symbol of our transformation. For partners, the new brew was an accomplishment. It's been a while to rally around, to savor, to celebrate. For customers, Pike Place Roast ushered back in some of what had been missing in our experience. Aroma, freshness, a lighter, a little theater. And for shareholders, Pike Place would be proof that the company was actively reclaiming its coffee authority. Folks, I told you the other day, my Starbucks stock had gone into the sewer. People were selling like crazy, and I kept a hold of it. And since the day I bought my stock to now, we've had over a 200% increase. You know, it's amazing when I look at this. But listen to what Howard says, because this is the key right here. I was determined to demonstrate to our partners that Starbucks was going to push for self-renewal and renovation. Pike Place Roast was just the beginning. You're at your beginning today. Live life like it's an epic adventure. I'll see you at the top. Be back tomorrow morning for Radio for Your Mind as we look at elevating the core. Bye now.